From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of June 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will join us to take a look at the cash grain situation, and it's wholly different than what's been happening in the futures market, so we'll talk with him about that and what kind of basis levels we might find across different parts of the Midwest. And then we'll take up the weather forecast. That with Mike Tenura. T-Storm weather in Chicago. Heat has finally arrived. Going to stick around, he thinks, for maybe about a week or so. There'll be some periodic rainstorms as well. We'll discuss all of that with him right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. In Chicago for this Thursday afternoon, corn futures finished lower, down 3.25 in the lead July at $4.40. December 4.51, 3.5 lower, and next year's July finished at 4.59, down 2.75 cents. July soybeans 6.5 cents lower today at 8.87 3/4. November at 9.12 1/4 down 6. January at 9.23 3/4, 6.25 lower, and next year's July 2 cents lower at 6.45 3/4. The bean oil on changed. Bean meal down $1.20. July wheat futures at 547.5, up 3.75 for the harvest month. That for the soft red. The hard red, 468, that's the Kansas City, down a penny for the day. And the live cattle futures, June contract up $1.57.5, August down 2.5. It finished at 105.35. Feeders are 2.5 cents lower at 135.80. And July lean hogs at 73.82.5, up 27.5 cents. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be with you, Todd.
We have a couple of reports that are due out. Grain stocks and acreage report. I take it you believe that the trade is preparing itself for some bearish numbers.
Well, you know, thinking back, you know, I think it was a week ago, might have been like 10 days ago. You know, we heard a lot of talk about maybe, you know, corn acres going down 10 to 13 million. And then we heard yield estimates as low as 135. And the market didn't respond bullish to that. In fact, that's actually when the correction started to take hold. So yeah, it kind of looks to me like the trade really doesn't think any of those estimates are going to be USDA is going to get anywhere close to those kind of acreage declines in tomorrow's report. And then as far as yield estimates, the next shot that USDA has at shaving off yield estimates, if they want to use some of their modeling based upon planting dates and all this kind of stuff, would be the July report. So there's really, it's hard to see until we start getting some official numbers that the trade can really put their hands around. We're just kind of in no man's land here. And I think we are finishing up the end of the month, the end of the quarter, going into a major report. And, you know, quarterly reports, I've learned a long time ago when it comes to quarterly reports, you know, you just kind of fasten your seatbelt because you have no idea what's going to come at you. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing here in the marketplace. It's a breather, consolidation. I mean, it does appear that people kept planting probably longer than what anybody thought they were going to plant. Now, the question is that real late planted crop in the northern half of the growing region, is that going to actually, you know, make anything or not? And that's only time's going to tell on that. So I think it's a lot of this is probably long liquidation in front of the end of the quarter, end of the month, and just in case USDA throws us a curveball of some kind. But yeah, I mean, if you go back, and, you know, you listen to the commentary after the March report, and there's commentary there that says, you know, what happened? There's about 3 million acres or there's maybe 4 million acres that kind of disappeared from the previous year. Now, does those acres show up tomorrow? And that's the question. I mean, was the true planted intentions 95 million acres of corn versus 93? Or, you know, what was the true planted soybean number? So USDA will give us another guess. I suspect there might be a lot of asterisks in tomorrow's report, explanations of, you know, why we came up with these numbers, because I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of second guessing USDA's numbers tomorrow, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, so Seth Meyer, who is leaving USDA for FAPRI in Missouri, but was the head of the World Agriculture Outlook Board, did explain, I don't know whether that was to us or whether it was in a tweet, but somewhere along the lines that prospective plantings report in March does include a set of prevented plant numbers. So whatever they had plus PP, right? So then, and most think that's,
yeah,
they didn't say how much, but most believe that's 1.2 to 2 million acres or something like that. And that's the reason, and soybeans, I assume, are the same way. That's the reason sometimes when we get to the June acreage numbers, that acreage can be larger than it was in the prospective plantings report, not because we made more acres, just because the PP got planted or those abandoned acres got planted.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see how that goes this year. And I was thinking, Dan, just because you taught me a long time ago to look forward about what the market can do, and I know you've got to be thinking about this, but we have so many acres that are so late, 5-6 weeks, and a tremendous amount of corn in Illinois, and I've not been through Indiana and Ohio, but I can only guess that they're pretty much the same way, along with Michigan and South Dakota, that it might be the crop progress reports on Monday that spark things. When you get the condition reports and silking doesn't show up at July 21, and it doesn't show up and the end of July, and it's not in Illinois and other states, and it's not until about August 4 or 5 that they begin to silk. It just seems like that might be the report that kicks things in. I don't know. You've been through more years than I have on this stuff.
Yeah, this is, of course, every year is different. But I got some cyclical work that basically says this market could mess around consolidating and maybe even going lower into about the second week of July. And then something catches in the second week of July and then stirs up a rally into August. Now, I don't know what that might be in the second week of July. It could be anything. It could be. I do know that end users, I've got a lot of old friends that I've been in the industry with that are, you know, end users for food companies, pet food companies, all this kind of stuff. And they're, you know, trying to figure out how do they hedge themselves against a potential run up in prices. And I basically been telling them, I said, there's really, until USDA starts giving us official estimates, nobody's really going to know nothing. Now, maybe come middle of July, what triggers it is a weather pattern change, or probably more likely that would make everybody panic, because everybody's hoping and praying that this crop makes the distance. And you know as well as I know, when you see corn that's only 5 inches tall on July 1st, there's reason to be concerned whether or not it's going to make the distance. And I would say that would probably panic everybody. Come mid-July, we get a big cold wave, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody begins to panic. Oh, man, we're halfway through July, and we're so many days behind on growing degree days. But there's something that's going to trigger it. And I wish I knew so I could, you know, make my last million here before I die. But something's going to trigger it, and it could be crop ratings. But everybody's going to be concerned about maturity levels. That is going to be dandy. And then what happens? I mean, I just heard, you know, there's places that got 5 inches of rain here in the last 24 hours. And I would say probably something that would maybe trigger a rally, which would normally trigger a decline, would be if you got a good 3-4 inch rain and cooler temperatures in mid-July, which would normally, you know, seal the deal on a crop, in this case, it would probably create more problems than what it would if we got one of those, a cold wave, you know, cooler than normal temperatures and a big heavy rain system through the Corn Belt would not be preferable in the current environment, you know. So, but yeah, I have a feeling that the crop rating levels, the trade is going to want to try to trade those. But until USDA does a resurvey, and I don't know, I've heard that they may do a resurvey on acres for the August report, and then they'll be out in the field and they'll give us a population count. So, you know, starting August crop report, we're going to start, you know, narrowing this wide range of guesses right now, just like we were talking before the show, that there are some newsletter bulletins that says they estimate acres to be between 81 and 89. Well, you know, that 10 semi trucks can go through that one, you know. And I don't think anybody really has a clue. And like I said, usually these drowned out spots that we see in the field, you know, the corn in the rest of the field makes up for those drowned out spots. But this year, the drowned out spots are five times larger than what they were, you know, have been in the past. So it's going to be an interesting year. And I think tomorrow is probably just the official beginning of an argument that's going to last all the way into the January final crop report.
Okay, just a bit of time left, but I do want to address old crop corn. There's a lot of it out there.
Well, myself, I would probably hang on to it, but I also know that they got bills to pay. And while the futures have been kind of walling around and weakening, if you look at Central Illinois cash corn prices, and I do look at that, and the only reason I look at it is because that's the only official published cash price that you can track for every day, and I've been tracking it for 40 years. You know, it really hasn't come off much of its highs. So what we lose in the futures, a lot of times the basis improves a little bit. So, but if you've got a whole bunch of it, there's nothing wrong. I mean, these are way better prices than what you thought you had were going to get. So there's nothing wrong. One thing I did learn in my years of being a market advisor, when a farmer calls you up and asks you about selling something, you'd never talk him out of selling something because there's always a reason why he's selling it. He may not be telling you, but there's a reason he needs to be selling some corn for one reason or the other. So I really don't want to talk anybody out of selling anything. And I would say, you know, knowing what I know in the markets, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. There's nothing wrong with peeling out a little inventory here and there. But, you know, it looks to me somewhere down the line, the corn market is going to have to go through a rationing phase unless we just have perfect weather from here on out.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Now up next, a quick story from the United States Department of Agriculture about Vidalia onions. When you go to pick them up for that July 4th hamburger fest you're planning, it might cost you a bit more than you expect. Gary Crawford has the details.
If you buy Vidalia onions, you may have noticed they are costing more this year. The main reason?
We don't have as much supply.
Chelsea Blackston with the Vidalia Onion Committee, Vidalia, Georgia. And of course, the supply of these sweet onions is always limited because they are only grown by about 80 registered growers in parts of only 20 counties in Georgia. That's it. Total plantings are usually about 12,000 acres.
But this past season, we have cut back to about 9,300 acres. In the beginning of our transplanting season, there was a lot of rain, so a lot of them, that it was just so much mud, they were not able to get in there and get what they wanted planted.
Now that sounds familiar, but also growers had decided to reduce acreage a little bit for economic reasons, but the weather took acreage down more than they wanted, sending Vidalia onion prices for consumers up and helping boost prices for other sweet onions as well. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
On this Thursday, we're now joined by Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago to help us out with the forecast. Looks like there are some thunderstorms rumbling across the Midwest. Let's start there, please.
There are some storms up in the northern Corn Belt, and we need to keep an eye on those. We can see that they'll continue to move across parts of Wisconsin and Iowa this afternoon. But the big uncertainty regards whether or not those will turn to the east and then the southeast later on this afternoon and tonight. We do have a low chance for heavy rain across much of the Corn Belt tonight, and it's all because of that cluster. It's very muggy across the southern half of the Corn Belt today, and this storm is riding over the top of that. There is a chance that that could ingest some of that muggy air and then again turn further to the south and east. The reason we're a little bit uncertain on this, though, is that computer models just have not picked up on this cluster like we would normally see. All of the computer models are having major problems right now handling the excessive soil moisture that exists, and that's corrupting their output. And if you just looked at pure computer model output, you would come to the conclusion that it's not going to rain in Iowa or Illinois. We already know that's not the case because we're seeing rain in Iowa. And again, we're a little bit cautious about this. Highest chances later today and tonight are certainly along and north of I-80, and then uncertainty starts to increase as they move on to the south. We should have a better idea on this in a few hours from now, so we'll need to keep watching it. But basically, the radar could change as we move forward.
Farmers have been awfully concerned that growing degree days have not been piling up very quickly, though it looks like we're going to be a bit warmer for a while now.
We will be for about a week from everything that we can see. Temperatures will be topping out in the 80s and 90s for the next 7 days, and lows will only bottom out in the mid-60s to low 70s. That's a big change from where we were, because until yesterday, we hadn't been below normal across the U.S. Corn Belt on temperatures for 17 days in a row once you weighed it out by corn production. So that's a long time. Basically, it was not warmer than normal between June 9th and June 26th. Now we're turning a little bit warmer, and we certainly like to see that.
And finally, what do you see longer term in the scenarios you can build out for the end of June and the beginning of July?
Well, we just need to start out that discussion by cautioning that all of the computer models, no matter which one you like to look at, they're all having big problems handling different features. And it's because it's been so wet outside. When it's this wet, it's just hard for them to model exactly what the humidity levels look like at different levels of the atmosphere. And because of that, all of their output becomes suspect with time. And that just adds another layer of uncertainty to what's already a fairly uncertain period going forward. From everything that we can see, the upper level high that's making it nice and warm now will essentially linger for about a week. After that, things get a little dicier because we can tell with some confidence that it will be hot to the south and west of the Corn Belt in 1 to 2 weeks from now, but it also will be pretty cool off to the northeast. Now, any shifts in either one of these air masses would change the weather forecast in the United States. If the hot air tends to build out a little bit, that would turn everybody warmer, and this warm pattern we're in now would essentially continue and maybe even heat up a little bit more. On the other hand, if that cool air mass were to become the dominant feature, that could send some cool fronts through the Corn Belt and leave everybody 5 to 10 degrees cooler with highs more in the 70s and 80s as opposed to the 80s and 90s. Again, this is all in about 1 to 2 weeks. You want to talk even further out than that, 2 to 3 weeks, well, all these things become extremely muddled by then, and we just don't have a lot of confidence. But it's all going to come down to that feature. We can see that there will be heat to the southwest. We can see that there will be coolness to the northeast, and that transition zone will be somewhere near the Corn Belt. The difference in 500 miles makes a big difference on whether farmers are experiencing hot weather or they're experiencing cool weather in 1 to 3 weeks from now. And of course, along with that, the rain chances tend to shift around. We can say with some confidence as well that we're going to see some decent rainfall across the northern half of the Corn Belt over the next week. It's not only because of the thunderstorm cluster we already talked about, but we'll see more of those going forward. And again, computer models have generally not been picking up on these very well, and that's just a function of how unusual the atmosphere has been and the soil moisture levels are across the central U.S. So, Todd, I know that might not be the clearest answer that you've ever heard, but I can tell you two features, heat to the southwest, coolness to the northeast. Where does that line up? That's going to tell the story for the middle of July for sure.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That is Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. We're now joined by Matt Bennett of agmarket.net. He is in Windsor, Illinois, and traveling today. You're headed up, I think, to Knox County. You're probably going to see some corn that's not in very good shape. But I went through your area on yesterday, and it didn't look like it was in very good shape either.
Yeah, I don't know that this spring is, it's definitely not been, treating a whole lot of people differently than others. For the most part, our area looked great before two Saturdays ago. And then in 7 or 8 days, we had about 7 to 8 inches of rain. And so we certainly filled up the ponds again, weather stressed about everything we could. Beans looked pretty yellow, a lot of yellow spots in the corn. Some of the corn hadn't had nitrogen yet. There's a whole host of issues. I think that some of those can be fixed, if you will, but essentially I keep telling people you can't fix a corn crop that gets damaged from too much water earlier in the year. You might be able to bring it along and get a decent crop, but you can't fix it.
So it can't be fixed. The basis levels appear that they understand some of this. Have they popped in your area?
Yeah, they've popped pretty much everywhere, and I think a lot of that, especially here in East, a lot of that is that, originators are scared to death on getting ownership of corn. They want to get a hold of as much of the good corn as what they can. Obviously, harvest is going to be a little bit late. It may be very late. If we remember 09, couldn't get a hold of any good dry corn. They're afraid about getting in the same sort of situation again. And so basis for not only cash, but even for new crop is appreciated in a lot of places, particularly here in East.
Hey, one other question, and I know you've probably been thinking about this and farmers may have been asking, what kind of harvest point do you think we'll have? And will it be past those first frost dates in October for the state of Illinois?
Well, I think especially northern Illinois is going to be pushing it big time. I think in my part of the world, a lot of that corn that went in the ground in late May, especially if they planted, maybe 112 or shorter season than that, they're probably going to be okay. But, you hear about the early frost they had, like, for instance, in 74. A lot of producers in Illinois didn't harvest any corn drier than 35%. So, man, I sure hope we don't get into something like that. But most forecasts are saying after this little heat wave that we've got, it's going to cool off again.
What are you telling producers about their old crop and what they should do with it?
I'm holding on to it if I've got ownership of it. If it's in the elevator, probably not going to get rewarded quite as much as if you have it at home. But cash is king at this point. The basis continues to reward the producer that is holding on to the corn. And I think if the market falls as far as futures is concerned, you're going to see basis pick up the slack.
Anything else before I let you go?
Well, let's just hope tomorrow that we get a little bit of a good surprise. I think the only big surprise I could see is be maybe in quarterly stocks. I think those could be revised a little bit lower, and if that happens, it could be interesting.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a safe drive. That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Helps us close out this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Commodity Week will be live to air tomorrow, so no recording tonight. Don't be looking for it on the web until tomorrow afternoon. Speaking of which, you can find us online at WILLAG.org.